This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
I'm deeply grateful to Mrs. Leshkowitz, to Mrs. Atlas, for inviting me yet once again to come to speak to all of you at Neshe Cares. Is it a great honor and a privilege to speak in the presence of one of the greatest Marbitzei Torah in our generation, Rabbi Ilan Mansour, and I hope that tonight we'll all be able to be inspired together. We've come together during the days of Sfira. We all know that the days of Sfira are a preparation for Kabbalah Satayra. We're all preparing for Shavuos when we once again receive the Torah. But why is it 49 days? Where did that number come from? And the Bnei Yisrael tells us something fascinating. He says that the words Lev Toiv, a good heart, equal 49. Lev is 32, Toiv is 17, 17 and 32 is 49. And for this year specifically, it is so incredible that we should be talking about Lev Toiv, and I'll tell you why. If you open up the Shulchan Aruch, the Aruch Chaim, that section that deals with daily life, and you go to the very last siman. The last siman is Tov Reish Tzadik Zion number 697. This year, there was a very interesting shaila what to do. It was a leap year, so we had an extra month of Adar. So the question is, what do you do on the 14th day of Adar in the first Adar? It's not really Purim. We know that Purim is in the second Adar. So listen to what the Rambam says. The Rambam says some people make a party on Yud Aleph Adar in the first month, and some people don't. But you know something? Make the party. You know why? Toiv Lev Mishta Tamid. Shlomo HaMelech teaches us a pasuk. Toiv Lev. Somebody who's got a good heart. Somebody who's happy with what they have. Somebody who's happy for other people. Life's a party. Mishta Tamid. Yeah, make a party. Why not? Add something extra to your meal. Yud Aleph Adar. So that's very nice. Lev Toiv, 49, that's a time for a party. That's a time to learn how to live a festive life. So the Shari Tshuva on that halacha says something fascinating. He says, you know what the Ramah did? The Ramah gave us something so interesting. Because he ended Shulchan Aruch with these words, Lev Toiv Mishta Tamid. But that's how he started Shulchan Aruch. You know the first words after the Beis Yosef starts the Shulchan Aruch? When the Ramah writes his first Haggah, the first thing he says is, Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Samid. Hashem should be in front of you all the time. So he has Tamid at the end, Lev Toiv Mishta Tamid. He has Tamid in the beginning, Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Samid. We know that you're supposed to bring two tamidim every day, the carbon tamid in the morning, carbon tamid in the late afternoon. That's shnei tamidim kehil chasan. That's what life is all about. The two tamidim. The Shari Tshuva says it. You got to have God in front of you all the time. Shivis Hashem l'negdi samid, but life's a party. Don't forget that. Enjoy life. Toiv lev mishta tamid. So if we have come here tonight during Sfira, during one of the days of Lev Toiv, we've got to learn how to enjoy life. We've got to learn how to make life a party, but with all within the parameters of halacha. And I'll tell you an amazing thing. The Yerushalmi in Kiddushin says something you wouldn't believe it. Osid Adam Litain Din V'Cheshbon. You're going to have to pay. You're going to have to give a din v'cheshbon. Al kol sheros einai v'lo yochal. How come all the wonderful foods, why didn't you eat them? You don't have to eat them all on one time, you know what you look like. But the idea is, you got to enjoy life. And you know what the Yerushalmi in the Dorum says again? You won't believe it. Perik Ches Ois Aleph. Radimi says, Loidayach Masha Osr Lecho Teira? It's not enough, all the Yisurim you got in the Teira? Sha'atam Avakech Leser Loch Dvar Machayim? What are you making up the Chumris? Where did that come from? Why are you making life difficult? Life's a party. Life's a party, and that's what we're going to learn tonight. Lev Toiv, in these days of 49 days, we're going to learn this balance. Shnei Samidim Kel Chosan. Shvisi Hashem Lenegi Samid. I'm going to learn Lev Toiv, Mishta Tamid. And I'll tell you something very interesting. I'm going to tell you a Gemara that is so puzzling. And I heard a fabulous pshat in the name of Rav Nissen Alpert, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. The Gemara tells us, and this is going to be our theme for tonight. The Gemara tells us that Hillel once came to the Simchas Beis HaSheva. Now we all know Hillel was the most humble person. And Hillel makes such a statement that everybody, all the commentaries, all the Mefarshim are asking. Hillel said, "Im ani kan, hakol kan. If I'm here, everybody's here. You know, let the party begin." What does that mean? I mean, Hillel is humble. How can he say, "Im ani kan, hakol kan"? So a therapist, Rav Shmuel Ackerman, who was a Talmud of Rav Nissen Alpert, said, a pshat that Rav Nissen Alpert said, that is so great. You know what Hillel said? "Im ani kan, if I am here, hakol kan, I am totally focused on you. I'm not texting, I'm not emailing, I'm not listening to three people at one time, I'm not answering my phone, I'm totally here. Im ani kan, hakol kan." And that's what we're going to learn tonight. How to be in the moment. How to be there all the time. And you know why we have to learn that? Because nobody's ever any place. You go to a chuppah, they're not at the chuppah. The guy's texting. The guy's reading his email. I saw people tonight while Rabbi Mansour was speaking. They're reading their emails. They're texting. They're not here. They're someplace else. There are people in shul. Women, if you would know what some of your husbands do, you would be embarrassed. Oh, you say Shalom Ben Roimov? Rabbi Mansour knows it's true. Takes out a cell phone, he's texting. I am a moyel, all of you know that. So in certain shuls, the minig is that the moyel goes up to say V'choroi Simoi HaBris together with the Baal Tefillah. In a shul that you all know that, of course, I won't say, I come up to say V'choroi Simoi HaBris, the Baal Tefillah's texting. Who's he texting? The Rabbeinu Shel Olam? I couldn't believe it. And now, what's even, I don't know if you could say it's worse, at the supper table, people sit with their cell phones right next to the, you know, the main dish. In their own house with their children. That's awful. They're not here, they're there. So whether they're at a chuppah, their body is there, but their mind is someplace else. In shul, they're not there. In supper, they're not there. If you know, it used to be at a simcha, everybody would come in to see where they're going to be sitting. Who cares? I'm not talking to my neighbor anyway. I'm just texting. So now nobody cares where you sit down because nobody's, literally everybody's texting anyway. So they're just coming there, you know, to say mazel tov, but they're not really involved. So besides everything else, besides the cell phones that have and the iPhones and the smartphones that have become such an addiction, we have so many things that we are involved in. It's unbelievable. And all this takes our attention. That's the circuit overload. Now the ad for this session tonight was fabulous. Now, of course, all those that are going to listen to these CDs or videos, they didn't see the ad. But it was sockets upon sockets upon sockets. And I made a list of all the things that were there. It's incredible. Children you have to worry about. You have to put away time for davening. Go to friends, events, health, housekeeping, marriage, parents, parnosa, school, Shabbos, shiduchim, shul obligations, summer, therapy, tuition. It's unbelievable. How do you handle everything? How can we handle all these things that we're supposed to be involved in? And I believe that at this moment, in this speech, we have to stop for a second. We have to think about something. Just today, Albert Kahn, who makes sure that everybody has insurance, he sent me a video. It was a 3-minute video. It was incredible. And he said like this. This was the video. It showed a young couple just moved into a new neighborhood. And the husband and wife, they're having breakfast in the first day that they're in their new home. And the kitchen window is open. And she sees the neighbor who's hanging up laundry. And she says to her husband, "You know, that laundry is not really clean. She doesn't have a good detergent. She doesn't know how to clean laundry." Okay, he doesn't say anything. 2 days later, again, she sees the ladies hanging clothes out to dry. And she says, "You know, somebody's got to teach her how to do laundry. You know, that laundry is really not clean." And this goes on 3 or 4 times. And then the 5th time, she's having coffee, and she says, So her husband, oh my gosh, that's amazing. Look at that. That laundry is clean. How do you think that happened? He says, I got up early this morning and I washed our windows. And that's so great. You know why? The laundry was as clean as ever. And that's what I want to say about this topic. Before we talk about circuit overload, we should be dancing that we have kids in school. Baruch Hashem, that we have tuition problems. Baruch Hashem, that we have children that are marriageable and we have to find them shidduchim. Baruch Hashem, we have parents. Baruch Hashem, that we have a house, that we have to do housekeeping. Baruch Hashem, that we have a spouse. Do I have to tell you about sister to sister or samchenu? And these people desperately would want to have a spouse? Baruch Hashem, let's get the right focus. Of course, circuit overload is what we're going to deal with. But let's remember, this is an asoyan of Ashirot, not chas v'shalom, an asoyan of Anios. And that's how we're going to solve the problem. And you know what I believe? One of the problems is that we're always making happiness a moving target. You see, if a target is in one place, you can aim an arrow, a gun, or whatever, and you can throw something at the target and hit it. But if the happiness is a moving target, you're never going to get there. Aren't there some people say, oh, if only I was engaged, I'd be so happy. She's engaged. Oh, if only I could get married already, I would be so happy. She gets married. Oh, if only I would have a baby. That would make me so happy. And she has a baby. Oh, if only the baby would sleep through the night. That would be make me so happy. And finally, oh, if only I could get the kid accepted in the school that everybody thinks that this child should go to. That would make me so happy. Oh, if only he would graduate. That would make me so happy. If only he would get accepted into that high school that everybody's going, that would make me so happy. Oh, if only he would be engaged already. That would be so happy. I would be so happy. Oh, if only he got married already. I would be so happy. If only he would have a child already. I would be so happy. If only I could be young again. I would be so happy. You know what that means? It's a vicious cycle. You're never happy. You got to be in the moment. I remember when my wife and I, when we first got engaged, people used to tell us, oh, this is the best time of life when you're engaged. And then once I got married, oh, this is the best time of life before the kids come. And then when the little kid was so cute, oh, this is the best time of life. You know something? Every time is the best time of life. And every time is the time that you have to be in the moment to share the happiness. I want to tell you what happened with me the other night. Sunday night, Mother's Day, traffic, Shreklach. I have to come from Queens, two different families that I'm very close to. One had a fort in Flatbush. One had a vort in Borough Park. So the Whitebergs, many times I stayed by them in Toronto. Their daughter was getting engaged. I came to Flatbush. Fine. I'm going crazy because I got to go to another vort in Borough Park. I got to prepare this speech. Like Rabbi Mansour said, it's a new topic, right? We never spoke about this before. So right, I don't know how Mrs. Leshkowitz and Mrs. Atlas come up with new topics every year. But what this was never discussed. So I'm thinking about this topic. I go to the second vort. It's a guy, Boris Schwartz, who's come with us many, many times to Poland, and he plays music, and he's fabulous, and I've got to go there. So it's in, I hope I pronounce it right, in the Bushtina Shul. I've never was in that shul on 12th Avenue in Borough Park. It's downstairs in the basement. As I walk in, I see they're going to daven Ma'ariv, Arbit. Okay? They're going to daven Ma'ariv, right? So I figured, okay, good, I'll chat Ma'ariv, which is not a nice expression anyway. What do you mean you're going to chat Ma'ariv? Right? You're going to daven Ma'ariv like a mensch, hopefully. Okay, good. So, good. I come in there. I don't know if you know this, but the Noyde Yehuda was very, very much against all the extra psukim that the Shem Yichud and the Hini Buchum Zuman before you do a mitzvah. You say the bracha, that should inspire you. As a matter of fact, Rav Chaim Kanievsky doesn't say any of these L'Shem Yichuds. He just says the bracha, that's how he benches Sfira. And many people do that. I daven Nusach Sfard, and I happen to say, I like saying L'Shem Yichud. Fine, so we daven Ma'ariv, and then some shuls, they say Sfira before Aleinu, some after. In this shul, it was right after Aleinu, I believe, and they start saying L'Shem Yichud. It's a place, of course, to say L'Shem Yichud. Okay, you know, I'm getting antsy already because I want to go downstairs and, you know, I got to get home to prepare. Fine. It gets quiet after everybody says L'shem Yichud. And, you know, I'm waiting for the Rav to make the bracha. And then he starts. L'shem Yichud. He's going to say the whole thing. The whole L'shem Yichud he's going to say. And I'm thinking, what is this? I never saw this. And you know what? I decided, you know what? I'm going to enjoy this. I've never seen this before. I opened up my siddur and I started listening to Rav Eichenstein's magnificent nusach of L'shem Yichud. Not only was it so beautiful, but obviously he says it the same way every night. So everybody in the shul knows the nusach. So you could hear the humming and you could hear the words. Like they're saying the next word ahead of him in the same nusach that he's going to say it, because they know it already from every single night. And by the time he gets to, you know, he says it so slow with such a nusach, and the whole shul was with him. You knew this bracha is going to be explosive. You knew that the bracha of Sfira is going to be the best bracha I made in any 49 nights of Sfira. And it was magnificent. And the whole olam said the bracha, and it was so beautiful, and it was so meaningful. So because I was in the moment, and I wasn't worried about the next thing, I was able to say a bracha the way I never said it before in Sfira. Because you got to be in the moment. That's how, when you're overloaded with anything, don't worry about the next thing. Right now, be here. Do this thing. You got to be in the moment. Now, one of the problems of not being in the moment is because I heard of something as I was preparing this talk. I never heard of this. People have a disease called FOMO. F-O-M-O. You know what that means? Fear of missing out. Fear of missing out. That's why they're always on their cell phones. Do you know that 1 billion people are on WhatsApp every month? Many of you don't know what WhatsApp is. Within a few years, you'll know. WhatsApp. Do you know that children between 18 and 24 send... How many texts do you think a teenage child or an 18 between 24 sends a month? 2,022 a month. Do you know, I said to my wife, I can't believe this, but they've proven that people spend 23 hours a month texting. 23 hours! You gotta be crazy! So, okay, the older people, plus 55, they only sent 244 texts a month. Right? But they made a study. Americans send 69,000 texts every second. Every second around the world, 69,000 texts are being sent. And not only that, you could understand why people are sending texts, because 90 minutes it takes for somebody to answer an email. It takes 90 seconds for somebody to answer a text. 90 seconds. Everybody's texting. So you're not here, you're there. You're not in the moment. You've got to be in the moment. So how are you going to stop this? So I bought a gift for all of you tonight. And my wife is going to be sitting by that table over there. And every single one of you will be able to get this. And I want to tell you about this bookmark, how it came to be. Almost 2 years ago, Rachmana Litzlan, when Naftali, Gilad, and Ayal were kidnapped. And Nebuch, nobody knew where they were for 18 days. Nobody knew where they were. And Nebuch, at the end, they found out that they were murdered. And they were murdered the first day. Naftali's mother, Mrs. Frankel, said the most incredible thing. She said at the end, she had a partial nechama, she had a partial consolation. And everybody was looking at her, what consolation could she possibly have? And she said that, I know my son loved doing mitzvahs. And the mitzvah that he loved to do more than anything else is the mitzvah of tefillin. And I knew that those terrorists, they were not going to let him wear tefillin. So when I found out that he was killed the first day, I felt at least my son didn't have to go one day without wearing tefillin. Imagine a holy mother to say something like that. I went crazy from that. I felt Klal Yisrael has to make a tikkun when men are wearing tefillin and women are davening. And wherever I went, I said that the tikkun that we have to make is with cell phones when you're wearing tefillin or when a woman is davening. You have to disconnect to reconnect. It's not enough to put it on vibrate. Because when you put it on vibrate, you're going to turn on to see who sent you the message. You have to disconnect to reconnect. And we made thousands and thousands. So a young man, Mordechai Sapoznik, designed it. And then a guy, Dovi Waxler, made me thousands. Every one of you, take it. Disconnect. And then Rabbi Yaron Halbertal told me something that I just lost my breath. He said that the word Naftali is Oisiyah's Tfilin. Could you believe that? Nun Pei Tof Lamed Yud is Tof Pei Lamed Yud Nun. And as a Moel, I can tell you, I always try to tell people, Shmo Gorim, a name has an influence. Could you imagine when the Frankels gave their son Naftali a name? Could they imagine that that would be his mitzvah? But I say that if we want to stop being overburdened, we have to shut the phones, not only during davening, but during supper. During supper, put the phone on the table and show your kids, I'm with you, not with that phone. When you go to a chuppah, don't put it on vibrate, shut it. When you go to be Menachem Avil, shut it. I will never, ever forget, I went to be Menachem Avil, an elderly woman, a mechatenista's mother, and I was sitting there. She had just lost her husband. They were married over 50, 60 years. And she was crying, and there was a lady that came in with an orange dress and an orange hat with a feather, as if she was going to a Halloween party. I mean, you know, that's not how you go to be Menachem Avil. But, okay, fine. And then as this woman, Rachman al-Islan, is crying about her husband, this lady in the orange, right? The lady in orange, relative, you can make a movie, right? So this lady in orange, her cell phone goes off. And she answers it. Oh my gosh. It took all my self-control not to say anything. But that's terrible. Rachman al-Tzan, you walk into a shiva house, you shut the phone, disconnect to reconnect. Everybody take it. Put it on your refrigerator. Carry it with you. Here it is. Take a picture. Put it on the... distribute it in the Sheikh Cares newsletter if you have one. Disconnect to reconnect. That's all we have to do. Can I tell you something? You won't believe this. You will not believe this. They took 10 people. They took 10 people, they put them in a room, and they told them they're going to give them a word search puzzle. A word search puzzle means you have like 10 lines of many, many different letters, and you got to find certain words in them. They took away everybody's cell phone. Five of them, they said, you could pick up your phone during the test. The other five, they couldn't pick up the phone. Now, the ones who were making this test, they had everybody's number, and they dialed all the numbers. So the five who were able to pick up the phone, they found more words. The five who could not pick up their phone, their heart rate went up and their blood pressure went up because they heard a phone that they couldn't answer. And when they switched it, again, now the second group were able to find more words because we have this separation anxiety. And that's really, it's because of FOMO, the fear of missing out. What are you missing out? Maybe Staples sent you an ad. Maybe Mixbook will be able to give you an album for your, you know, Yontif pictures or whatever, Holomite pictures. That's the first thing that we have to learn tonight. The first thing was be in the moment. Don't worry about all the other things. Wherever you are, be with your child, be with your spouse, be at the chuppah. Take away that cell phone, close it, disconnect to reconnect. We've lost our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We've lost our connection to our families. We've lost our connection to each other. Somebody from the audience told me an unbelievable thing. A group of women went out to a restaurant together and everybody put their phones in the basket. Whoever reached for their phone first, she paid the bill for everybody. Thank you, Mrs. Leshkowitz. What a great story. What a great story. I don't even think they got past, you know, the first course. And you know what's another thing? People have stopped talking to each other. It's unbelievable. I know women, if their child is on the third floor, they won't call them, they'll text them. Could you imagine? You ever see people walking on Ocean Parkway? Right, he's texting, she's texting. Who are you doing? Why are they walking together? Right? They're not paying attention to each other. So people have stopped talking to each other. And you know something? Because people have stopped talking to each other, we've lost this idea of friendship. You know, some of us who know each other for many years, so we're good friends. But those who don't talk, it doesn't establish. I'm going to show you now a halacha and Mishnah Berurah you will absolutely not believe. The Mishnah Berurah, the din is, according to the Beis Yosef, that if you see your friend, you haven't seen him in 30 days, and you really love that person, you're supposed to say Shachiyano. Do you know that? According to the Beis Yosef. And if you don't see a person in a year, you're supposed to make a bracha Machaya HaMeisim. Now, I only saw one person make that bracha. Dr. Askowitz of Shalom, the eye doctor in Philadelphia. He loved my father of Shalom. I remember we went to Philadelphia. He hadn't seen my father in years. He made a bracha Machaya Mason. I looked at my father. I touched him. Like, is he Ralph? I'm like, well, what kind of bracha is that? But that's what the din is, the Shulchan Aruch. Now, listen to this shaila. The Mishnah Berurah has a shaila. What happens if you had a pen pal? You never saw the person. And now you see him for the first time. Should you make a Shechiyano or not? We just said if you have a good friend, you haven't seen him in 30 days, you're supposed to make Shechiyano. What happens? You never saw the person. You just texted him all these years, right? Mishnah Berurah wasn't talking about texting, he was talking about writing letters. Listen to what he says. Reish Chofei, Sif Beis, Mishnah Berurah, Sif Katan Hei. Afal Pisha, he retook Savim Zebazah, even though that they wrote letters, even though that they texted, even though that they emailed. That's how we became friends. You never spoke to that person face to face. The love and the friendship can't be that good that you should have to make a bracha. Writing is not enough. Texting is not enough. So if you tell somebody that the Mishnah Berurah spoke about texting, nobody will believe you. But that's what he's saying. Why don't people call anymore? Call! People ask me today. Now, you would not believe this. It's hard to believe. I know you're going to laugh. Women from the labor room text me, I just had a boy, would you be the moil? She takes the phone in the labor room? And she's texting, that's how she wants a moil? It's crazy. People have forgotten how to call. There's no human connection. And that's a terrible thing. Now I want to say another thing that I feel is very, very important. And we learned this in Pirkei Avos, and I'm going to show you, as Rabbi Mansour said, we have to learn from what it says in the Torah. In Pirkei Avos, in Perek Beis Tezayin, it says, Loi Olecha Hamalocha Ligma. You don't got to finish it all. You can't. And you're not supposed to finish it all. Of course there's a lot of obligations. A woman told me the other night, I got 5 dinners to go to and 4 chasanas. What am I going to do? You know what I told her? You should be so happy, you're so popular. Of course you can't go to all over. And you're not supposed to go. And as a matter of fact, that's what Yisroi said to his son-in-law, Moshe. The Pasuk tells us, and he says, what's going on here? What are you doing, Moshe? It's impossible. You're going to get exhausted. The people are going to get exhausted. You can't do it all. And Moshe says, according to the Ramban, Moshe says, you know, there are many things that I do for them. I daven for them. If they lost an item, I'm the one who could tell them as a Navi where it's lost, and I judge them. And also I teach them Torah. So Yisrael says, according to the Ramban, okay, some of the stuff only you can do. Only you can daven for them. But you're not the only one who could judge them. And then Moshe Rabbeinu delegated. That's what you're supposed to do. You have all these things. You can't always delegate, but you know something? In the house, you shouldn't be doing everything. Your kids should be Moichel Me. Every child should have a job. There's nothing wrong with a boy vacuuming Matzah Shabbos. Can I repeat that? So all the boys who will listen to this will hear it. There's nothing wrong, guys, even if you learn in Lakewood, or in Riverdale, or in Long Beach, or in Eretz Yisrael, there's nothing wrong with helping your mother Matzah Shabbos and vacuuming the dining room. You know what a family is all about? A family is called a team. You know what team stands for? Together, everyone accomplishes more. That's what a team is. And I'll tell you what we did. Baruch Hashem, we have 5 children. Every night, on the refrigerator, every child had a job. One prepared, you know, put out the silverware, one vishna dish, one vasha dish, you know, everybody. You know what that means. Vish means to wipe and vash means to whatever. But everybody participates. There's no such thing as you doing it all. And there's no reason why your boys and girls can't go shopping. They should go shopping. And especially if they know how to drive, that's all part of it. And that's what a family is all about. And again, I saw such a beautiful expression. Life is involved partly in making things happen and in letting things happen. You can't do it all. And don't try. Because you're not mechuyev. Lo yalecha melacha ligmar. You got to do as much as you can do. But don't feel complicated. You can't and you should not go to every single chasana that you're invited to. You can't. And I got a secret for you. You'll be surprised. They got married anyway. So, unless it's your brother, your sister, somebody that's very close, of course you have to go. But people understand, Bar Hashem, that's our problem. It's in the Soyan of Hashiras. And that's why more and more people are not getting invited to weddings, they're getting invited to the Simchas Chosan and Kala, because you just can't give up the whole night. My wife always says, yeah, for you it's easy, you just put on a suit. Right? But you know, a wife has to get dressed and makeup and everything. It's a big ordeal. You can't do it every night. You know, people ask me, you know, how do you travel wherever we open the paper? You know, you're in Chile, you're in Mexico, you're in, you know, Brazil and Switzerland. Oh, my kids are married. You got to be crazy to do this stuff if you have kids at home. You got to be with them. That's what it's all about. And if somebody doesn't understand that you didn't show up to their kiddush or to their upsharing or to their, you know, chasana or whatever, well, they'll live with it. You can't do it all. Don't make yourself crazy. Moshe Rabbeinu agreed with his father-in-law. You got to delegate. You can't do it all. And one of the things that we have to learn is to prioritize. Make a list. I'm a big believer in making lists. You have 5-6 calls a day to make for whatever reason. Write that down. Number one, number two, number three. And do the important things first. You know, there are many, many people who love to get the little things out of the way. But that's a big mistake. You know why? Because then you're left with the important thing that you haven't done and you feel awful. And that's not a good feeling. If you do the first thing in the morning, if you can, to do the most important thing after you've made the list the night before, or when you get up and you made that list, and you prioritize, and you do what's important first, you feel good about yourself. You're not going to feel that pressure of circuit overload, because these are petty things. But there are a lot of people who do all the petty things first, and that's wrong. Don't do that. Make a list, right? A, B, C, D, or whatever, or 1, 2, 3, 4, and do the important things first. That's how you're going to feel good about yourself. And I'll tell you an amazing study that was just in yesterday's Wall Street Journal, which is, by the way, a wonderful paper to read. The Wall Street Journal, by the way, is very pro-Eretz Yisrael, and the writing is excellent. And yesterday, they had an article called The Improbable Happiness of Israelis. Amazing. Could you believe you read that? Amazing. They took the World Happiness Report, which was done by the United Nations. They took 158 countries and tried to see which are the happiest people. Israel came in number 11. How could that be? And they were wondering. The security problems in Eretz Yisrael are shereklach. Out of 36 democratic countries, the top place, the safest place, I think, was Japan. But the 30 was Israel. So how could people be happy? You know why? You wouldn't believe. They did a study, not only because they're proud of being Yidden, but because they have strong families and long friendships stretching back to childhood. It doesn't happen if you're texting to somebody. You're not going to become their friend. You don't feel close to them. They don't feel close to you. We have to start calling again. You have to start spending time with your children and spending time with your close friends. That's how you feel good about yourself. And that's how you feel confident. And all the problems in the world, somehow they're going to get solved when you have a family or friends that are behind you. But it doesn't happen with texting. It doesn't happen with texting. It has to be when you call and you make people feel special. Just remember this. When your little child or your grandchild has a birthday, a 5-year-old, they're never going to be 5 again. Just remember that. And they're never going to have that sitter party again. And they're never going to have that upsharing again. Drop whatever you can and go. And I'm talking for husbands as well. Husbands should be there. for simchas of children and grandchildren. It's not the easiest thing, but you got to make time. Because grandparents have today, we're living much longer than we ever lived, Baruch Hashem. If I were to tell you, I mean, people today are great grandfathers and great grandmothers. I mean, it's unbelievable. They're still jogging. You know? I mean, I used to think, you know, who was a great grandmother? Rachel Amenu. When I was growing up, and I never even saw a great grandfather. Now, all I have to do is look in the mirror. It's unbelievable. Could you believe it? I don't believe it. But I'm not the only one. There are many. Baruch Hashem, you should all be great grandparents. But the point is, you have a shaychus with children. You can inspire them. You can motivate them. But you have to be there for them. And when you do those kind of things, all the other pressures, it falls by the wayside. Because you feel good about yourself. Because you feel fulfilled. You feel meaningful. There's a Shvisi Hashem Lenegdi Somit, and there's a Toiv Lev Mishtah Tomit. But the priority, don't forget the priority. I remember I once went to Rav Olba. I said to him, Rebbe, tell me, many times I speak to parents, what should I tell them? And he said, tell every parent they got to give two things to their children, time and love. So my son was with me, and he asked Rav Olba, how much time do we have to give our children? And Rav Olba on the spot said, as much as they need. That's very important. And you know as well as I do that if you don't give your child love and attention and validation, they're going to get it someplace else. Many of the kids at risk, not all, but many of them is because the fathers are not home. I'm not talking about divorced. I'm talking the fathers are not home for supper. A father should be home for supper. He shouldn't be out there working, making an extra commission. And play this tape for him. This CD, let him hear it. He has to know it. A family that eats together and talks together is going to be able to grow together and be inspired together. But a father who's not there, and as Rabbi Mansour mentioned, a mother who's not there, you're not going to have hashpah on the child. They'll resent just the opposite. Everything that you do, they're going to resent him because they'll say, I had no father, no mother, because they went out to do various things, even if they're good things. So the children are the priority. You know, the topic was also treasuring the everyday moments in life. I want to tell you about mitzvahs that we do every day. I want to tell you a story that I just heard literally 2 days before Pesach this year. I have my nephew, Huri Gutman. He calls me up, he says, Uncle Pesach, I just want to tell you something. I just saw a Be'er Heitev. And I must tell it to you. Because of something that happened to your mother. He says, yeah, it was his bubby. Now my mother, the last day of her life, of course we didn't know that it was going to be the last day of her life, was the second day of Sukkot. She was in Paul Kimball Hospital in Lakewood. So my nephew Hoodie, who lives in Lakewood, he was going to be with my mother those days. So it was Yom Tov morning, the second day, and Hoodie goes over to my mother and says, bubby, would you like to make the bracha on the Lulav and Esrig? She was not responding anymore. He wasn't sure if he heard her, if she heard him. And he said, hey, Bobby, let's do it together. And he put the lulav and the esrog in her hand. And he said, Bobby, I'll say the bracha. You say with me. And he made the bracha on the tilas lulav. And they shook the lulav and the esrog 4 different directions. And he said, I don't know if she said the bracha or not. But then I wanted to take away the lulav and the esrog. But she held on to it. She wouldn't give it to me. And finally, I let my hands go from around her hands. And I saw that she took the lulav and the esrog and she kissed it. And then she gave it to me back. Said, now I didn't know if she was lucid enough to make the bracha, but she certainly was lucid enough to show how much she loved the mitzvah. And he said, all these years, 7, 8 years already, he says, I never knew why she did that. But he teaches in a school in Edison, New Jersey. I think it's called Shari Tzion. And he said, this year I learned the Be'er Heitev. I want to read this Be'er Heitev to you. It's unbelievable. He was like screaming on the telephone. Be'er Heitev, Tof Ayin Zayin, Sivkot Nalef. Kosav Shloh, the Shloh HaKadosh writes, Ra'isi Mibnei Aliyah, I saw from the Hechera mentioned, Shehoyu menashkin hamatzos. This is in Hilchos Afikomen. They used to kiss the matzos at the Seder. Umorar. And the morar. I couldn't believe it. This is the first year I kissed the morar. I never knew you're supposed to kiss the morar. V'chein sukkah. And also the sukkah. The hecher mentioned they kiss the sukkah when they go in and out. V'chein dalad minim. And also the lulav and esrig, shebelulav, vaakol and all lechavoy v'mitzvah to show how much you love the mitzvah. Va'ashrei misha oivid Hashem b'simcha, and lucky is the person who serves Hashem b'simcha. Of course, I called all my children and grandchildren. I told them what my mother did, and everybody was kissing all the mitzvahs all yontif, including me. I mean, they kissed me. That's what I mean. But the point is, isn't that beautiful? Isn't that beautiful when a parent shows a love of a mitzvah? That's the everyday moments. And I tell you, you have to show your children that you love mitzvahs. I'm going to show you something I never showed this to anybody before. I'm going to show it to you anyway. Because I want you to learn from this. You see, I believe everybody should have their own sitter. You see this sitter, you can see it's well used. I had it bound. Leather bound. Wherever I go in this universe, this sitter comes with me. You see this tilim? This tilim is leather bound. Every month I say tilim. I've been doing it for 30 years. My grandchildren, they love to count. You know how many times Zadie said tilim? I'm not going to tell you how many times. More than 300 times that I said tilim. But they know this is precious to me. My mother had a tilim that was so precious to her that when she passed away, I said, this is what I want. And I'm going to give it to the first grandchild that's named Hindi after her. And we talk, I gave it to one of the granddaughters who's named Hindi after her. But when children see that you have a love for a mitzvah, that's the everyday treasures. That's the every moment treasures. They see that davening means something to you. They see that a mitzvah means something to you. Your siddur should be your best friend besides your spouse. And my siddur, I have so many things underlined. I'm such a big believer in underlining in your siddur. You hear a vart, and it means something to you. And Shemoneh Esrei, underline it. So the next time the siddur is talking to you, many of you know I've spoken about saying Altira after Aleinu. The five anis, I, for whatever reason, we're not going to go into it now. It's underlined in my siddur. Haroife l'shvurei leiv, and the Halalukas, which stands for Halel. Hey, Lamed, Haroife l'shvurei leiv. Every morning I see that. I begin to realize that's the greatest praise you could say to somebody. Heal the broken heart. The ritvas, pshat, and mechaya, mesim, it's not important right now. But underline and show your kids that you do that. You're making challah for Shabbos, do it with your children. Those are the everyday moments. Those are the mitzvahs. Of course you have obligations. But there's no greater obligation than showing your child that you love the mitzvah. And when you're cooking for somebody, shom zacha, do it together with the children. When you're packing for Tamchis Shabbos. I remember, it's unbelievable. I remember as a child, this is going back over 50 years. Rabbi Lemelech Tress, who was my uncle. My mother, La Shalom, was named Hindi Krohn, and his wife was Hindi Tress. They were first cousins. So I remember as a child, him coming every Rosh Chodesh Nissan or around that time, and he would take me, and that who was a nephew, and some of the other cousins, his sons, and take them to bake matzahs. As a child, I'm still remembering it now. So it's always very special to me when children and grandchildren are going to bake matzahs. They feel a chavivus of a mitzvah. That's an everyday thing. Part of being not pressured and not stressed out is when you know you're doing good things. The other things will wait. And if they don't get done, they'll get done eventually. But there's nothing more important. I will never forget. I was growing up in Kew Gardens, in my father's house, of course. And my father added a room to the house. Now, the room had a flat ceiling. So on top, you were able to go out from a door onto that roof. So my father wanted to make a makah, or sisa makah, la gagecha. When does anybody do a mitzvah like that? So my father just didn't have a makah built. On Shabbos, you learned the Minchas Chinuch with all of us. And there was a whole Shailat Shulchan Aruch, whether you make a bracha or not. And then we all went up on Sunday, and he banged in the last nail, and he made a bracha, and we took pictures, and we recorded it. And that's an impression that still stays with me all these years. Because the everyday moments of mitzvahs, we could fly through a Shemoneh Esrei. We could fly through Lulav and Esrei. We could fly through everything that we did eating matzah. But when somebody stops and says, this is the Hilga matzah, we're going to kiss it, that makes an impression on children, especially the night of Pesach, which is the most impressionable night of the year. Just one more thing about Chavivus HaMitzvah. I just want to tell you this. There is a tzaddik. I mean, we have so many great tzaddikim in our generation. It's unbelievable. You know, it's so ridiculous to say that this is a bad generation. One of the tzaddikim in our generation is a guy in Coney Island Avenue. His name is Heshy Pincus. He has a farm store where he sells tefillin. So I just want to tell you what he does. I can't recommend it enough. I've done it with a number of my grandchildren. If you buy tefillin, have them written by him, and he has them written for you, he has the child come into his store, and he sits personally, and he gives you a whole display and a whole lecture of all the skins and how the tefillin is written and how it comes off the animal and the inks and everything. It is fabulous. When a child puts on tefillin like that, it's halik. His father and his grandfather went with him. It's halik. That's what life is all about. And when you're doing something like that, and then you take out the grandchild for ice cream, you know, what else is there in life? You have to worry about your shul obligations or the dinners that you can't go to? Who cares? This is what's important. And when you do these things, all these other things fall by the wayside. That's prioritizing. Your family, your children, your grandchildren is more important than anything else. Don't worry about all these other things. They'll get done. And if they don't get done, you get somebody else to do it. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu did. That's what prioritizing is all about. Circuit overload, we should be thrilled that we have the options to do all these things. You don't have to do it all. You have to do the important things. And the important things is family. Spending time with them, playing games with them, reading to them, and then of course, doing mitzvahs with them. Now here's another thing. If you want to feel good about yourself, and not worry about all the things that you can't do, become a person of gratitude. Here's an attitude on gratitude. Listen to this, that somebody told me something this year. Amazing. All the years we're saying the Haggadah. So some woman teacher, Mrs. Kassira, she told me it's not her voice, but it is so great. She said, before we say Hallel at night by the Seder, we say Dayenu. Why do we say Dayenu? Could you just get up and say Hallel? No, because we want to say, Hashem, you gave us this. You gave us this. This would have been enough. This would have been enough. If you only would have given us Shabbos, you only would have given us the month, you only would have taken it to Har Sinai. All these things. When you begin to realize how much Hashem has given us every single day. Everybody's got problems. That's what Golus is all about. Nobody gets away scot-free. But if you become a person of gratitude and you itemize to yourself all the things... You know, just like there's a list, you know, of all the things that we're involved with, so I made my own list. Here's a list of things that you should think about. Maybe write them down, you know, another time you can make your own list. Obviously, you don't have to use this list. Of things that we could be grateful for. You have a car that's working? You have a spouse that's working? I don't mean just, you know, in a job, you know. They're functioning. You have a house? You have grandchildren? You can hear? You can see, you've got friends, you've got a neighborhood. When was the last time you thanked Hashem for your neighborhood? You have a great Rav. There's so many great young Rabbonim today, especially in Brooklyn. It's unbelievable. People who daven by Rabbi Sinneman, people who daven by Rabbi Plotnik, people who daven by Rabbi Reisman, by Rabbi Moshe Weinberg. It's unbelievable what's going on here in Brooklyn. You ever thank Hashem for these great people? These Mabite Torah, Rabbi Mansour, what he does to the Sephardic community, it's unbelievable. He deserves a great round of applause. And there are many, many people like him that devote their lives for the Tzibur. And we are their beneficiaries. And you want to know how you can be a beneficiary of all, most of these people? Go to TorahAnytime.com. Torah, I'm telling you, you're in your car. You can listen to, you know, a million hours a year of Torah is learned on TorahAnytime.com. Including my son, Rabbi Eliezer from Passaic, who has halachas for women. He has almost 400 shiurim. It's unbelievable. We live in a great generation. And if you take advantage, you tap into all the things that the Eibishter has given you. You know what I believe? Stop tomorrow morning when you're saying brachas. You can't believe how people say brachas in shul. It's just flying 95 miles an hour. But stop. Stop for a second. Zoykev kafufim. Anybody who's ever had back pain, right? I don't want to, with a raise of hands, right? Anybody ever had a heel spur? Rachmona l'slan, you should never have a heel spur. It's like a dagger is on the bottom of your heel that when you get up in the morning, you can't even put your foot down. It's awful. Hameichim etzadikov, David, I could walk. Zoykev kafufim. I can get out of the house. Shosali called Tzorki. You gave me wisdom. Stop and think, and you'll be so happy. And you know something? If you have an attitude on gratitude, that you should thank people, all of a sudden you're going to become such a happy person, because you'll see so many people who do so many wonderful things for you. You know who deserves a real round of applause tonight? Not only for tonight, but for all the years, and Mrs. Leshkowitz and Mrs. Atlas, what they've done. You know how much Torah has been taught in these Neshei Care sessions? With Rebbetzin Zava Bronstein, Allah Shalom, Rebbetzin Youngreis. It's unbelievable. And we just take it for granted. We think, yeah, Sphere is going to happen. It's not by itself. I'm supposed to speak to them 10 times, you know, until we finish, you know, planning this whole thing and coming here. It's a lot of good things. And then when you realize all the wonderful things that the Eibishter has given us, it's no circuit overload. Those things will get done? Not, but I feel so good. You know what I think? People, you should make up your mind that you're going to start writing once a week. You write a thank you letter, a thank you text, a thank you email to somebody. You know what happens to yourself when you look for things to thank people? You become a very grateful person. You become a very happy person because you realize so many people are doing things. I always say in shul, how many times do people go over to Balkaria to say thank you? How many times do people go over to Baltfila to say thank you? What about that kid that's picking up all the food after Shalosh Shuras? Anybody ever go over to that child? Does anybody go over to a Rav and say thank you for the drosha? There's so much to be grateful for. And when you become a grateful person, you're not envious of anybody. You're so happy for people. It's a circuit overload. I'm doing wonderful things. I'm doing happy things. I'm happy for people. Toiv leiv, Mishta Tomid, Shvisi Hashem l'negdi somid. So I won't do everything. It'll get done. And if it doesn't get done, somebody else will do it. It's okay. But when you prioritize in life, prioritize with mitzvahs, prioritize your family, and prioritize by saying thank you to other people. I'm sure many of you certainly heard of Helen Keller. Helen Keller was a woman, I can't believe, you know, she only died in 1967, which is really not so long ago. She was 88 years old. When she was 2 years old, she became blind and deaf. But she became a great woman. She graduated college. She spoke all over the whole world. And she wrote an article, 3 Days to See. You should read it. I'll read you just 2 paragraphs. I've often thought it would be such a blessing if every human being was stricken blind and deaf for a few days at a time during their early adult life. Darkness would make them more appreciative of sight. Silence would teach them the joys of sound. She said, I have a friend. I asked them. They just returned from a walk in the woods. And I said, what did you see? He said, nothing in particular. And she says, what do you mean nothing in particular? It's Hashem's trees. The budding, she used to feel the branches to see if maybe a new bud came out. And she says what she would like to see if she could see just for 3 days. Those people in her life who made her life special. The books that people read to her. And then she would go to museums or business places. But imagine, close your eyes for a minute. And imagine what life would be, chas v'shalom, if we couldn't see. It's awful. We make the bracha pekeach ivrim. I have it underlined in my siddur. I try, if I remember, to close my eyes before I say the bracha and then open them. What a difference. That's saying thank you. All of a sudden you become a different person when you're saying these brachas. I'll tell you what you should see. See your grandchildren. I can't understand how anybody can see a grandchild without hugging and kissing them and knowing that they were zeicha. You know what I love to look at? I love flowers. You know, in our lawn we have tulips. I don't know if you have tulips here, but if you have tulips, You know, they come out around May or June. Show your children how they open in the morning and how they close at night, and they open in the morning and they close at night. It is so gorgeous. You know what inspires me? You wouldn't believe. Bridges. I think one of the greatest pictures I ever took in my life, I was on the Belt Parkway. It was late afternoon. The sun was setting and the Verrazano Bridge was right over. Stunning. The sun was coming right over the bridge. To me, that's the confluence of Hashem and man. The best of Hashem, the best of man. I had that picture over my desk for a number of years. I'll tell you something about the Verrazano Bridge. I'll never, ever forget this. Just to see how people see things. I remember Rav Gelli had just come from England. And for whatever reason, he was in my house. And then I was supposed to drive him back to Brooklyn. So we're driving back at night on the Belt Parkway. And, you know, the lights are on the bridge. And I say, Rav Gelli, that's the Verrazano Bridge. He said, yeah, I heard about that bridge. That connects Borough Park to Lakewood, right? That's how he saw the bridge. It's amazing. It's true, right? What else was that created for? Want to hear another great bridge story? I love this bridge story. Rav Shmuel Birnbaum, who was the ultimate masmid, never took his eyes off a sefer, always learning. Many, many times, if Amira Bacha was getting married, they knew that the Rosh Hashiva is not going to go away early from the Seder at all. He's going to be there until the end of Second Seder, and then he'll come to be Masada Kedushin. So when they came from Shanghai, they were coming to California. So they were coming to San Francisco. And the Golden Gate Bridge was up in view. And all the Bacharim ran up to the deck to see the bridge. And they realized, wait, Rav Shmuel's not here. So they ran down. And they said, Rav Shmuel, come see the bridge. It's gorgeous. It's like one of the wonders of the world. He said, Ichol bleiben by my Gemara. I'm going to stay by my Gemara. So they said to him, but it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Listen to what he said. But this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity that I won't be Mevatel Torah for the Golden Gate Bridge. Imagine that. This is what he was going to do. He's going to take advantage of not going there and not being Mevatel. He had that one chance in his lifetime. That's greatness. That's how you see things. You want to know how to see things? We talk about the everyday things of life. In 1933, the Chazon Ish came to Eretz Yisrael. So he came to Bnei Brak. So of course, it was all sand. There was no sidewalks. It was all like farmland. But then they started building sidewalks and they built street lights. And they built a street light right in front of the Chazon Ish's house. You know, the government understood this is an Adam Gadol Ad Miyoyed. So they built a street light in front of his house. A few weeks later, somebody came over to him and said, Rebbe, what do you say to that street light that's right in front of your house? Look how a tzaddik looks at a street light. He said, you know, I noticed something very interesting. When I'm down the block and I'm looking at that light, my shadow is very, very big. But as I get closer and I come close to that street light, my shadow is very small. He said, you know, that light reminds me of the Or HaTorah. If somebody's very far from the Or HaTorah, he thinks he knows so much. He's covering so much ground. But the closer he gets to the Or HaTorah, the less he really knows. He realizes how little he knows. Isn't that amazing? That's how you see things. Simple things. Tomorrow, take a walk and look at the beautiful trees. Yeah, I got to tell you this story because it's amazing to me. One of my closest friends, if not my closest friend, Yaakov Solomon, told me this. A couple years ago, he was walking past the shul and he see that there's a whole crowd and everybody's very serious. And he realized there was a Levaya going on. Rabbi Yamin Shachner had passed away. So he knew Binyamin Shachner's son-in-law, and he knew that the son-in-law always spoke so highly about his father-in-law. So he decided he's going to go in. So he heard one Rav tell this story. Look how people look at things. He said, this Rav said, I used to see every morning Rabbi Yamin, he was standing by the bus stop. So I thought he's going to work, he's by the bus. But one day, I noticed, as I was walking, the bus came, and he left. The bus left, but he was still there. I was surprised, you know, there was still a lot of room on the bus. Why didn't he get on? I didn't say anything. And then, a couple days later, I walked by the same bus stop. I see he's standing there, but he doesn't get on the bus. So finally, I went over to him. I said, Rabbi Yamin, like, why do you stand here every morning and you don't get on the bus? He said, I'm not here for that bus. You see, I was in the concentration camps. And I saw how all the men and the women were killed and beaten. And I knew that the only future for Torah is the little children. So every morning I come to this stop because over here, the school bus stops. And there's 32 school buses that stop here every morning. Some for the boys' schools, some for the girls' schools. I just want to see these buses because that's the future of Klal Yisrael. Next time you drive down East 7th or you drive down 13th Avenue and there's a Yiddish bus, a school bus there, don't blow your horn. Just thank Hashem that you're stuck behind the future of Klal Yisrael. That's how you see things. Then you're not overloaded. You're stuck in traffic, but look what I'm behind. I'm behind those Heilige Kinder that are learning Torah. That's how you look at things. And when you look at things like that, you become a different person. I just want to tell you two more things. You know, the Bnei Yisoschah that I told you before says Leif Toiv is 49. And he says, you know why it's 49? You know why we have 49 days? Because you have to develop a Leif Toiv during Sfira. That's the Derech Eretz Kodma LaTorah. What does that mean to have a Leif Toiv? I'll tell you what a Leif Toiv is. I remember the first time Rav Asher Weiss came to our Aguda convention. He just blew everyone away. I love that man so much. Every time I go to Eretz Yisrael with my children or grandchildren, we always go to visit him. He knows Kol HaTorah Kula. It's like I'm a teleprompter for him. It's unbelievable. So the first time he came to the Aguda convention, he told this story. I could never forget it. He told the story about the Kloisenberger Rebbe. He's a Kloisenberger Chassid. He said it was Erev Yom Kippur in one of the DP camps. I think it was Felderfink. And you know, the Kloisenberger Rebbe is a heilige person before Yom Kippur, the Yom HaKodesh, the holiest day of the year. He was getting ready. And then a little girl comes in and she says, Rebbe, my father used to give me a brocha every Erev Yom Kippur, but I don't have a father anymore. Could the Rebbe give me a brocha? And the Rebbe took a handkerchief and he put it over her head and he says, Ichel Zayin Dein Tata, I'll be your father. And he put his hands over her head and he gave her a brocha. A very warm bracha. And the child was so moved. She was so touched. And she ran out and she told her friends. And all those little kids that didn't have fathers or mothers who wanted a bracha every Yom Kippur, they all came to the Rebbe. And Rav Asher Weiss said that day, Erev Yom Kippur, normally the Rebbe would devote himself to tefillah and kedusha and learning. Instead, he gave 87 brachas. I remember, Yikorahimi, that's why I remember it. I made myself a simon. 87 children he blessed. That's priority. He had a lot of things to do. He wanted to prepare for the Yom HaKadosh. He hadn't celebrated Yom Kippur in the last couple years in the concentration camp. But there's the priority. Having a Leif Toiv doing for somebody else. I want to tell you something. This mamash breaks my heart. I read this, I just couldn't get over it. Some of you may know that a few months ago, there was a nurse, Daphne Meir, who was never killed by a terrorist. She was 38 years old in the West Bank settlement of Otniel. She was a nurse of neurosurgery in the neurosurgery department in the Soroka University Medical Center. But she was a remarkable tzaddikus. And the way the world heard about this was through Rabbi Yitzchok Zilberstein. Rabbi Yitzchok Zilberstein gives a shiur once a month for doctors. And he found out that after this woman, Daphne Meir, passed away, was killed, Nebuch, that they released a tefillah that she wrote herself before she would give medicine to the people in the hospital. You have to read these tefillahs. They could break your heart. Shows what a Leif Toiv is. I'm just going to read some of them in English. Hashem, please grant that I understand and remember that the medications that I give are a gift from you. And their efficiency or the efficacy is your message to us. Hashem, grant that I feel joy and the beneficial influence of the medications that I mercifully can give to those that are ill. Hashem, grant that I can act in modesty and learn and teach others about the successes and failures in giving medication. Hashem, grant that I give medications to the sick from a position of good health and that I remember to be grateful that I myself do not have to take them. And grant that I have the empathy and the good health with the patient suffering and helping him with all my ability every day, every hour, using the tools that you have given me. This is a heilige nurse. It should be a schus for her neshama. Get it. Get it online. Get their tefillahs that she wrote in Hebrew. There is nothing like it. You see what a Leif Toiv is all about. This woman who obviously was so busy, but she had time to say these tefillahs. That's what it's all about. Finally, I want to tell you one more thing and we're going to end with a great story. One of the most important things that you can do to enjoy life and not to be so pressured and stressed out as to take time for yourself. Every single one of you must take time for yourself every day. And don't worry, you know, the whole world is still going on. It's going to go on, and it'll be there after you do your puzzle, or you take your walk, or you play your piano, or you read your newspaper, or you read your Maggid book, or Ami, or whatever. Ami, Mishpacha, Yated. I'm telling you, you ever see what they... What? Rabbi Mansour, right? His book, of course. But it's unbelievable. Before Pesach, you know, the mailman, you know, like he came in with a hunched shoulder. It's unbelievable. Wow, each magazine printed like 8 different books. It's impossible to read all of it. But you're entitled. And when you do that, you're going to be a better person. And don't feel guilty about it. You just shut down everything, shut your phones, don't answer the phones, get a coffee or whatever, and just sit down and read, or sit down and do whatever you want to do for 15, 20 minutes. And then you become a better person. And then all these things, you get to enjoy, you think about them. Think about your children. Think about how lucky you are to live in our generation. What a great generation it is. I can't stand when people say that this is an inferior generation. Look what we're doing in Klal Yisrael. So many great people. You know? There are many, of course there are people that do things that are uncomfortable for us. But, you know, we're living in a great time. It's near the time of Mashiach. There's so much chesed going on. There's so much learning going on. Of course there's problems. But you have to remember, Toiv Lev Mishta Tomei Debishta wants you to live a life that's a party. Together, Shavisi Hashem L'Negdi Summit. I just want to end just with this thing. We really don't have much time for review. I'll just tell you this thing, which Rav Avram Osman from Riverdale says. You know, at a GPS, when you make a wrong turn, no GPS ever yells at you. You made another wrong turn. Left turn. How many times I got to tell you? Make the right turn. Never. The GPS never gets angry. You know why? Because the goal is to get to the end destination. And if you're going to get angry and you're going to get upset, you're not going to reach that destination. The person is just going to shut you down. And it's the same thing with life also. You can't do everything. Don't get on yourself. Don't get angry with yourself. Then you're just going to throw it all out. You try. You recalculate. Try to figure it out. What am I doing right? What am I doing wrong? But don't get angry. Don't be frustrated. And you know something? Take advantage of opportunities. That's the thing I want to end with. When you take advantage of opportunities that the Eibishter gives you, and you feel so good, and your life is so meaningful and so fulfilling, there's nothing like it. You're not going to worry about anything else. Because you're living a great life. So I want to tell you two things. I remember the first time I was in Manchester. It was in the morning. After a whole night's flight, somebody said to me, "You want to go to Rav Segal?" I was so knocked out. But I figured, okay, how many times am I going to get this opportunity? I went in to see him. It was the only time that I saw him. I have such a beautiful picture of myself. And the Rosh Hashiva was so beautiful. And he spoke about the Chofetz Chaim Heritage Foundation. It was fabulous. I knew I was coming back 4 weeks later to Manchester. I could have said, okay, I'll go some other time. I'll go later when I come back. And 2 weeks later, he passed away. And all my life, I would have been kicking myself. I didn't take advantage of the opportunity. So of course I was exhausted. But take advantage of opportunities. You'll be a better person for it. 3 weeks ago, I was in Brazil, in São Paulo. I was speaking for a stock organization. It's called Macomb. And the guy Shlomo Safra is the head of it. Fabulous organization. It was their 10th anniversary. I finished a speech at the dinner. A guy, Charles Abalafia, comes over to me. He says, "Rabbi, I got to take you home. You know, to where you're staying." I said, "I'm sorry, I got a ride already." He said, "No, Rabbi, you don't understand. I have a story that I've been waiting to tell you. And you're going to print it." I said, "You know, a lot of people tell me that." But he says, "No, I'm serious. Please, let me take you home." He starts taking me home and he starts telling me this story. It was a couple years ago, and it was Erev Shabbos. He lives in São Paulo, and there's a beach resort about 75 miles away, and a place called, I don't even know how to pronounce it, Guerreira. I don't know how you pronounce it. How do you pronounce it? Well, however. It's near Santos. It's near Santos, or whatever, which is a place of a port. And his father had a beach house there, but it was near a shul, so he was able to go to shul. He would be able to go to shul on Shabbos. Now, in São Paulo, which is one of the most dangerous areas to live in Brazil,
There's no major highway between São Paulo and Santos. It's a long two-way highway, and people know that they must fill their car with gas because if somebody gets stuck, you know, that's the end. Carjackings, killings, or whatever. And so, you know, you got to make sure that you have enough water and everything, and he goes Erev Shabbos. Now, along the way, there are just slum areas dotted on both sides of the highway. 20 miles outside of Santos, he gets a flat tire. Now, he says he was afraid to get out of the car because you can't get out of the car because, you know, they'll shoot you down or grab you and take the car or whatever. And he says, Hashem, please, I don't want to be Mechalel Shabbat. Please help me. But nobody's stopping. So he has no choice. He gets out of the car. Now, of course, and he's trying to flag down cars, but nobody's going to stop because they think it's a ploy. You know, maybe he just did this, you know, to rob somebody. So now it's getting closer to Shabbos. He's got to get out of there. He's not going to be stuck there at night. What is he going to do? So he told me, get into his car. On the flat tire, he's going to go as slow as he can to the first slum area. He's got to go in there. So he drives maybe 3-4 minutes, very slowly, and there's a slum area, and he takes the car and he goes into this side place on a sand road, and in a second, he's surrounded by dogs, by little kids, and men without shirts. You know, they're like very, very crossed. And he's saying, Hashem, please, please, don't let this be my end. And they say, what are you doing here? Of course, they speak in Portuguese, as he does. He says, I got a flat. Can anybody try to fix it? And they try to fix it. They don't know how to fix it either. And he sees a car. He told me it was looked like about a car that was 30 years old. He says, whose car is that? And this guy without the shirt says, it's mine. Why? He says, listen, I will pay you anything that you want. Just drive me. I got to get to Santos. So they make a deal. He's going to give him $50. And he says, let me get my shirt. He says, I have no time. We got to go. We got to go. Get into the car and we'll go. He gets into the car. He sees the guy has only one shoe. But okay, fine. They'll manage. Okay. He's got no shirt, one shoe. Fine. Okay. And they start driving. Now, he begins talking to the fellow. And you know something? It's amazing that sometimes, you know, when things happen, you're just looking for any Simmerman or Shemayim. And he starts talking to the guy. He says to him, what's your name? And the guy says, Charles. He says, I can't believe it. That's my name. Now, Charles is not a common name in Brazil. So like, I don't know why he felt it was a Simmerman or Shemayim that things were going to be good. So he says, sir, I just want to explain to you why I'm so rushed. He says, I'm sure you never saw a Jew in your life here, but I'm Jewish and we believe in God. And God created the world in 6 days and on the seventh day he rested. We can't do work. I can't drive a car. So I need you to please get me to Santos on time. So the driver looks at him and he says, you don't think I know what a Jew is? I'm not Jewish, but my mother's Jewish. He says, what? He says, yeah, I'm not Jewish, but my mother's Jewish. Well, he didn't want to tell him that means that he's Jewish because he's afraid, you know, he'll throw him out of the car. So he said, what does that mean? He says, well, my mother, when she was 7 years old, she grew up in Holland in the end of the 1930s. It was very bad for the Jews. And I took a look it up. There were boats that came from Germany and Holland, and they came to Brazil. And my grandparents landed in Santos, and they didn't want to have anything to do with Judaism. So my mother was raised as a Catholic and she married a Catholic guy. But so, you know, we're all Catholics. Again, he doesn't want to say anything. He says, so where's your mother? He says, well, she's dying. She's in a hospital in Santos and she's very sick. So this guy, Charles Abalafia, this is what I'm talking to you about. He says, could I visit her? He says, you want to visit her? Why? You don't even know her. He says, no, but if she's Jewish and I'm Jewish, I would like to visit her. So he gets him to Santos and he told me, Charles is such an Egel at Tzaddik. He said, I felt so bad that he was driving back because he doesn't know he's a Yid, but he's a Yid and he's driving on Shabbos, but he wasn't going to say anything. So Sunday morning, he comes into this hospital and it's a filthy place. It's a city dumpy hospital. There's 10 women in a room and the bed smell, it's awful. And he goes over to this woman, her name is Maria. And he says, Maria, you don't know me, but you have a wonderful son named Charles. He helped me very much. And they begin to get into a conversation. And once he sees that she's warming up to him, he says, Maria, your son Charles told me that you're Jewish. I'm Jewish, that's why I came to visit you. She said, he told you I'm Jewish? He said, well, are you? She says, yeah, I am. Most people don't know that.
And he says to her, "Do you remember anything from your childhood as being Jewish?" And she closes her eyes and she starts saying, "Baruch atah Hashem, Elokeinu melech ha'olam, asher kidishanu v'tzivanu." And before she says "Lahadin Neshal Shabbos," she bursts into tears. And she's crying so hard, she can't get the words out of her mouth. She's just crying and crying. And she's reliving her beautiful being raised by her grandmother. And finally she gets out the words, "Lahadin Neshal Shabbos." And he says, "How do you know that?" She says, "My grandma used to light the candles with me every Friday night." She says, "I don't believe in what my kids believe in." And he gets into a conversation with her and he says, "Can I be your friend? Can I come visit you once you're out of the hospital?" She says, "Of course." And he told me 2 weeks later she was home. He comes into her house, also in a slum area, and there's a crucifix on the door. A yashka is hanging on the front door. And he doesn't want to say anything because the children are there, but when the children leave, he goes over to her and he says, "Maria, you told me you believe in God. Why do you have the crucifix on your door?" She says, "I don't want it there. If you could take it, I'd appreciate it. Break it. I believe in one God. I don't believe in any of that." And he told me that when he left, he took it. And he took it to the trunk of his car and he broke it. He said he felt that he was being Makayim Lahavi Gilulim in the Aretz. And then 2 weeks later, she passed away. And he told me, as Rav David Cohen, who cried when I told him the story, he said, "Look at that. That guy took the opportunity to be Mavaka Chayla somebody, and he brought the lady back to tshuva." Imagine, who knows, maybe as she was dying, maybe she said the Shema Yisrael that she said with her grandmother. But that's only because he took advantage of the opportunity. He was a chassan at that time. His kala was waiting for him back in São Paulo. He could have said, "I'm busy, I have no time, I got to get my car." There's a lot of things that you could do. But take advantage of opportunities. When you take advantage of opportunities and they work out, you feel so good. All this other stuff, this side stuff. Hopefully you'll get it done. Prioritize. Keep your family in mind first. Make sure that your children know that you love mitzvahs. And take advantage of opportunities. Just remember the two things. Shivisi Hashem L'neg Yisomid and Toiv Leiv Mishta Tomid. In these days of Leiv Toiv, let's accomplish that. Thanks for inviting me and thank you for listening.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.